teaching teachers how to teach petroleum related curriculum.
What? What is a petroleum related curriculum?
So like in it's the
is this the wave of the future? ExxonMobil presents.
Yeah, HS it's like that.
137.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club today.
Welcome back to another episode of the Media Community Club podcast, Silicon VP edition. Although we've got some heated debate going on as far as what we call this. We said we would just try and beat Silicon VP, and we've got a couple potential contenders to the throne. So Brian, who is joining me tonight, I'm John Kissel, Brian Hartman.
That's me.
And Shane Sedner.
Yo.
Brian, your suggestion for this series podcast would be what?
VPC.
Okay. I imagine listeners everywhere furrowing their brows, getting the VEEP part, obviously, but the C is Silicon?
Yeah. Or? Well, no. The C. So like SI is the element symbol for silicon. And so sure. When you put that on the end of VEEP, and like in Spanish, SI is yes, but it's pronounced C. So you're at VEEPC.
Yeah, it could really increase our ratings in the Mexico City market.
And our hardcore periodic table fans will also note there is a C symbol for carbon on the periodic table. So they might think, VEEP carbon, I don't understand. This is confusing me. I spent all that time memorizing the periodic table, and now you've tied my brain in a knot. So perfect. Silicon VP, I mean, I don't claim it's the best thing in the world. I think it rolls off the tongue pretty well. And is just ridiculous and absurd enough to match nicely with our level of professionalism. But Shane, I mean, I'm not married to it.
What about just three good friends casting about Silicon Valley and VEEP?
That's a lot for me to type into the agenda every week.
How about CP? Seep?
Seep?
Seep? Seep?
That just sounds gross. Like wounds, seep. We don't want to associate that with our diligent work here.
Yeah. I'd hate for something lowbrow to be confused with these two shows.
So we've got a lot of good contenders here, is the point. And we hope that our listeners will chime in and let us know what they think as far as the episode or the podcast series title.
Like a good Facebook post they put out there.
I completely agree. I think that sounds like a great idea. I think that sounds like a great idea.
Fan or one fan who has 12 different logins.
We're closing in on 100 likes on our Facebook page.
There we go.
So
we've
a lot
been
of eyes.
A, we've almost, been that's almost 90 eyes. Since we started.
I mean, I haven't seen the charts or anything. I just know the number.
Oh man.
So Silicon Valley and VEEP. So Silicon Valley. Talk about that first, as it airs first. The episode this week was called "Terms of Service." So the plot here is moving shockingly fast. Dinesh is already done with his term as CEO. It only lasted a single episode and 11 days in Showtime. Piperchat is no more, and we see Guilfoyle celebrating as much by popping champagne, joyously exulting in Dinesh's humiliation. So I think this is a great episode of Silicon Valley, not necessarily because of how funny it was. I thought it was utterly average as far as joke density goes. But just like the plot momentum in this episode, I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, stuff happens.
Yeah, stuff happened very fast. Stuff that we did not think was going to happen from last week. Like I thought that Jack was just going to be languishing in the server farm forever. But it turns out that this is continuing to ruin Gavin Belson's life, his rivalry with Action Jack and his triangles. And we don't get to see Kumail Nanjiani in douchebag mode, which he was very good at portraying.
Who?
The actor playing Dinesh.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent at playing the douchebag. Not something he usually does. His stand-up is very much that of a nerd and a geek. And it was really easy to turn against him in that mode, but then he immediately brings you back with his scene in the bathroom and him hiding in the bathtub. He's just very plaintive, very defeated, very genuinely asking Richard for help. So I don't like to see these guys at odds with each other.
Yeah, but he was actually really good at this meeting, so.
Was he?
That was a good presentation. Obviously it worked, 4 for 4. And not that's a big deal, Richard. Sorry. It's just, it's fine. It is what it is.
Shane just watched these
episodes. I was going to say, it sounds like someone
so he is on the money
up.
as far as the dialogue.
Always blue.
So that's what's happening in the incubator over at Hooli. As I said, Gavin is still pretty angry at Jack for the plane stuff. And again, thought he was going to disappear, but he comes back upstairs and doesn't apologize because he doesn't know what he did wrong. But he does have potential huge new revenue stream for Hooli. But the 28 minutes that he cost Gavin are far more valuable to him than the billions of dollars that he stands to gain. And here we see the most irritating character in the show, in my opinion, the guru. I don't even know what his name is. Pop up and fuck everything up by interjecting with the security chief about what Jack is doing and making up a bunch of lies that leads to Gavin not buying Piper Chat, but acquiring it through legal intimidation. And therefore, bringing under Hooli all of the age of consent problems that Piper Chat is revealed to have had. As revealed by Pete Monahan, the disgraced lawyer, who I'm always overjoyed to see.
This is a really, really good side character episode.
Yes.
Guru, the security guy, what was his name?
I can't remember.
Hanford or something.
Hansen sounds right.
Jin Yang and lawyer guy. Fantastic. He's fantastic.
His eyes are so dead. But he's such a great lawyer. I don't think he's ever actually been wrong about anything. He gives good advice.
I wish I could remember exactly what he said about the line about he'll be ashamed of that well past when he gets the right to vote back.
I don't even remember what he did. But I mean, it's not the show has never shown him on. I feel like it was run into a Coke bender, or something. But the show only ever portrays him as just utterly even keeled, about to kick off his Walter White arc with a stint at a car wash. So he'll be a meth lord in no time at all.
I believe
based
it.
On how fast the plot is moving. So you mentioned Jin Yang. That's the last thread that we have in this episode. He continues to humiliate Ehrlich, extracting a free year and increased CRISPR space in the incubator for an octopus recipe. I was kind of confused by this. Like, how did Jin Yang get into a room to discuss an octopus recipe with a VC?
I thought...
Is that through Ehrlich?
I think Ehrlich set him up.
No. Jin Yang set it up, said I have this great app that just eight different Chinese recipes to cook octopus. Or it could have been, because it was explained two different ways, actually. Cause it was also explained that just eight different Chinese recipes to cook something.
We're talking about how he got it in the first place, like how
right.
he got the
he
meat.
Set it up. He set it up on his own. Because when they're at that place in the opening scene with Dinesh doing the presentation,
mm-hmm.
they left the room, and the guy's like, oh, I'll see you here on Thursday. And Ehrlich's like, what? And he's like, yeah, Jin Yang is hot right now, white hot.
Mm. But why?
I don't know why Jin Yang got set up. But Jin Yang got set up, and then Ehrlich's like, well, yeah, I got to be on that.
All right. I mean, I'm still a little unclear on that. But for the payoff, I think it's totally worth it. It's a sea animal.
Yeah. It's a water animal, I think.
Water animal.
Sorry, just watch it twice.
You did. So, you guys have anything else to add about this episode before we get into real world similarities and the Chris Farley show?
Somebody made the analogy of the new CEO to like the actual Pied Piper, only instead of leading rats, he was leading small children to an app.
Yes,
that was pretty good.
More good Jared stuff. Yeah. Always reliable. So, real world similarities, again, these are always going to be weighted towards Veep until we get like a more tech person on the podcast. No offense to either of you, but you know, feel free to.
I thought we got a good one from the guru. The ridiculous acupuncture in Gavin Belson's face that
yes.
obviously is just
utter nonsense.
Yeah,
utter fucking nonsense.
Even if you believe in acupuncture, that wasn't remotely doing it right. I don't think
if that was such a thing that existed, there is
right.
no doing it right.
Right.
because it is agreed. Nonsense based on fallacious theory.
But you're just sitting there looking like an idiot while the other guy's keistering a bunch of Keurig cups.
So the only tech world similarity I could think of was just the inherent grossness of like Snapchat and Piper Chat. I feel like Snapchat only exists for like sexting and dick pics amongst, and if the Wait. Threshold is still only 13 years old, all right, well.
No, that's middle school kids. They have this thing called a streak. Like if you talk to the same person every day, it adds one to your streak. And this is like all middle school kids talk about.
I think you can enlighten me and Shane on Snapchat and what the functionality of it is, Brian.
Well,
I
mean,
nothing about it besides its utility as a dick picture
machine.
Yeah.
Right. So for 14-year-olds, it is basically their Twitter/Facebook/text messaging. Like they don't really text each other. They Snapchat each other. That's just what they do. It's their messaging app. And kids in this country don't use WhatsApp like everybody else in the world. They use Snapchat.
Do kids use Snapchat specifically because there is no trace?
No, they use it because it's what's popular right now.
All right.
They don't pay any attention to that stuff. And like you can buy filters and I don't know, cover your face and whatever weird stickers and stuff. You can buy
is that with that
dog ears?
That's okay. That's
yeah, good. And you okay, can buy awful. Like
that's fucking awful.
You can buy regional filters. Like I think we did it during one of our high school football games. The high school paid for a filter so that your background showed up as something related to Monticello whenever you were snapping night.
14-year-old with a concussion.
It was a bunch of tau proteins just like flashing in the background of whatever the fuck.
Sorry,
Snapchat
Brian's
is.
Not allowed to laugh at his Blair.
Yeah, that's true. That's a
Speaking
good point.
Of Blair's, this week is brought to you by Benzene Law Group. Get you the justice you need and the money you deserve.
Thank you, Benzene.
Yeah,
as always.
I actually informed my boss that he's been sponsoring this podcast for over a year now.
Does that raise an eyebrow?
I think we go with it.
All right. I'm glad to hear it.
So considering he pays $0 sponsor.
I feel like you've potentially got at least one listener over the course of the time that Benzene has been sponsoring us has logged somewhere in their brain, if I ever need a lawyer, Benzene Law Group.
I think I've had one listener hire me as an attorney, but I did it for free.
Oh, okay. I feel like son of a bitch. I did it for free. Shit.
But hey, pro bono hours.
Sweet revenue stream all of a sudden.
Write that off on taxes.
I guess. Okay, so Snapchat and Piperjet have nothing in common, apparently. And
no, Piperchat is more like Skype or FaceTime. They even mentioned that.
I think we've more or less exhausted our real world similarities.
I actually have one more on this.
Please.
Using the words that people say on television, the bullshit words they use on television, and then using against them in a legal matter.
Well,
We're
I
seeing
think
that play out with our national government.
We are, because when people are in positions of leadership, like a CEO or a president, for example, they lose the right to speak off the cuff. And I'm totally fine with that.
Yep.
Like, their words matter.
Let's say if you're going to say something like, I don't know, this is a Muslim ban, and then you make a law that looks like a Muslim ban, you can't just come back and say, no, we didn't really mean that shit. And it's great that we're going to use that against them. And it worked out for our, I guess, heroes in this case.
Yes. Dinesh and the ACLU. Together. So, favorite moments from this episode of Silicon Valley. Shane mentioned the guru stealing the Keurig cups. I'm going to pick that as my favorite moment of the episode because fuck that guy. I can't stand that character. He offers nothing to anyone on the show. At least Gavin Belsom, who was like the ostensible villain, like he built a tremendously successful company. Like, he has value in the world. That guru offers nothing to no one, and I fucking despise him.
Just a character development for Gavin Belsom.
He's a Deepak Chopra type, another guy who can jump off the fucking Grand Canyon.
I love the fact that the character's here. It's great. It does not take him seriously or what his ilk do seriously. It's fantastic.
I think Mike Judge is a fairly skeptical person in general. And this is a great example of exactly that. Gurus being utterly full of shit. Brian, favorite moment from this episode of Silicon Valley? Anything else to talk about?
I like when they did the consumer panel at the end with all the kids.
Sure. Recurring character.
The guy who leads that and then like repeats their names after everything. I just think it just makes me chuckle inside. And then they had like the one old creepy guy in the back. That was clever. Appreciated that. Just lowbrow humor.
Shane?
Great character, like insight to Jared when
I feel like this is gonna be a recurring theme for Jared. Silicon VB.
Yeah, I already mentioned the lawyer line. That was probably my favorite part, but let's throw it out to scene with Jared where Richard's telling Jared that he has been looking at the data, and Jared takes it as something personal, because as if he's pitting him against Nesh, as if everyone shares his values of being dogmatic to the CEO or leader. He's like, he's my leader. And then Richard says something else. He's like, did I do something to anger you? Like, this is a weapon Richard was using against Jared. Like, it was like such a great insult. It's so good. It was just, here he is with his values and confused. Earlier he's like, let's talk about pussy and sports teams and their scores.
They have such a good grasp of who that guy is. So that's this episode of Silicon Valley. Moving on to Veep. This episode was titled Georgia, the country. So with a handful of exceptions, the cast of Veep is mostly reunited for election monitoring in Georgia between a despot and a guy who claims to be a college professor, but we quickly learn that he's just another oligarch. Selena is there at the request of the Secretary of State. Jonah and his staff of Ben and
Kent Davidson.
Jonah's there with Ben and Kent, a congressional delegation. And we also get another recurring character. Minna, the Finnish prime minister, former Finnish prime minister, is there representing the UN. And they all, you know, get into hijinks in Tbilisi as this crooked election is carried out. We see that anybody can get their finger dipped, which is the symbol of voting. Gary and Mike both get their fingers dipped pretty early in the episode and spend the rest of the 30 minutes in the background trying to hide their fingers off. Like characters will be talking and Gary will be in the back trying to open a water bottle one-handed.
That was hilarious when he was trying to open that with his mouth. That was really great.
And Selena just rejecting it as soon as he finally gets it done, because he spilled a little.
Right. You know, a slick move, taking the scarf off with his mouth and twisting around.
I feel like I would need to watch this episode again to just keep my eye in the background on whatever Gary is doing.
Some of the Gary stuff's a bit much for me sometimes. But sure. I guess with the one hand, that's what it was.
He remains very beaten down and dejected. And I prefer Gary to be in a more confident position. As false as his confidence might be, he is just Selena's butler, but now his position is just so sad to mirror Selena's. But we see the two candidates trying to bribe Selena with donations to her library. The two candidates have their own relationship with the guy currently in power having poisoned his rival, resulting in some pretty serious facial deformation in the Democrats' face. Who was played by Stephen Fry, famous British comic.
And not only facial deformation.
Yes. The swelling has not only occurred in his face.
Like a sea cucumber.
Yes, we learned this. We learned this because he is having an affair with Minna. And then Jonah, his plot line in Georgia, he's ditched by the other congressman. They claim it's hazing, but they just don't like him. And in a very sweet moment, he winds up with Richard at a neo-Nazi metal band concert. A throwback to Jonah's long-stated love of thrashing to death metal. One of the better character notes from the first season.
Of course he does.
Yeah, of course he does. And then away from the action in Georgia, it's just Dan and Amy. Dan readily agrees to be a sperm donor for Catherine and her fiance or wife. I can't remember if they're married or not. And Amy readily abandons her fiance after he drops out of the race following his humiliation. So another episode of people being their absolute worst selves and in the end not being rewarded for it at all. As we see Selena accept the bribe from the despot, but he is immediately overthrown. And this causes a panic, an economic panic in the country, and devalues the cost of her bribe from $20 million to $400,000.
It's not bribe, it's donation.
Sure.
I love Richard telling her about the exchange rate and then telling her congratulations. Like, like $400,000 is great to him.
Yeah, Selena was complaining about receiving $79,000 for her alliance for her allowance from Catherine not too long ago. So that's not gonna obviously not what she was hoping for. Watching her try and rationalize taking the bribe is a pretty painful series of scenes. Watching Ben and Kent tell her not to, but tell her to also at the same time, helping her through the mental processes that would allow her to so corrupt this entire process. But then on the other hand, Minna, who was often portrayed as the skillful politician and generally good person that Selena very much is not, she is just as corrupting, having been sleeping with Stephen Fry's character. So there's nowhere to hide in this episode. Everybody's corrupt, but it's funny. So it's all okay.
Sally Phillips as Minna is fantastic. I love that.
Yes,
character.
Her relationship with Selena, they just keep finding themselves in each other's way, where Minna thinks that she's Selena's best friend and Selena is hers. And Selena, I feel like she's told her multiple times, we're not friends.
Yeah.
I don't like you. But she just, but Minna, with her Scandinavian stoicism, just thinks she's joking the whole time.
Laughs over it and says, you could read me like a book. We're lovers.
Speaking of Minna, one of my favorite parts of this episode is her talking about the different types of orgasm very casually. It was very Northern European of her.
I think the key part from your mind.
I think the key part of that is how she mispronounces some of the words. Like vaginal.
Yes. So, as I say, I have a personal history with this country of Georgia.
Okay.
Back in 1993, I was in third grade.
Did Georgia even exist then?
It did. It was just created.
Okay. All right.
We were having a geography bee, and I was by far the smartest kid in my class because I went from a small school, pretty well-related, rated school to a probably – on the standard now that we'd have like a 1 out of 10. It was awful school. So
okay.
I knew cursive third grade and no one else did.
That's
so
a big deal.
Big deal. Yeah. So I would routine, like any in-class spelling bees, geography bees, whatever, we'd win. I'd win. And for the geography bee, the question I got that knocked me out was, I don't remember what the question was, but the answer was Russia. But Russia, it just disbanded. So it's kind of a 92 as well.
The USSR had just
disbanded. USSR had just disbanded. I wasn't sure where that left everything. And I went with the only country that I knew that splintered off was Georgia. And some dumbass kid in my class is like, that's a state. And I was like, no, it's a country. And the teacher's like, you're wrong. And didn't address or see that how, like, my extra knowledge, like, no one else in the class
sure.
would have known. That was kind of a fucking trick question at that point.
Did the teacher know that Georgia was a state
or
a country?
Know. I don't know. This is the same teacher. Actually, I think it was a student teacher knocked me out on this one for the spelling bee. Knocked me out because I didn't capitalize Indian. I didn't say capital I.
Oh, that's fucking stupid.
It was ridiculous.
That's dumb.
The teacher came back and she's like, asked the student teacher, like, what the fuck happened? Like, no, she didn't really say that in front of us, but it was crazy. I was so upset. Obviously, I remember this years later. So Georgia.
So presumably, while you're watching this episode, you had balled up fists.
I was very angry. I almost threw my infant.
Okay. Yeah. That's some buried rage.
You're from Georgia West.
So real world similarities between this episode of Veep and contemporary politics. Library fundraising, I feel like, is going to be a big part of this season. And the cost of presidential libraries has gotten a little out of control. W's most recent one built cost $500 million, or which is to say he raised $500 million to build it. The Clinton Library cost $165 million. Who knows what Obama's is going to cost? Both Clinton and W got tremendous donations from the Saudi royal family and other semi-sketchy sources.
See how much money Obama gets from Kenya.
We'll see.
That's awesome. Yeah.
They already gave him a place to be born in. So yeah. I think they're even. I think they're square. The Presidential Library Donation Reform Bill, for our listeners, is something that moves through Congress at the beginning of every year, at least going back to the 2 years that I researched this. 2016 proposed in the first week of January. It's about requiring disclosure for library donors. Regularly sails through the House. It gets stuck in the Senate for some reason. I don't know. The last action item for the 2016 version is like January 6th when it entered the Senate for being put on the agenda. The 2017 version is in the exact same place. Moved to the House, passed the House, and is just stuck in the Senate, probably going nowhere. So political corruption doesn't end, obviously, when political careers end. That seems
Trump
to go
be
on
so
continuously.
Hated where he stops that streak.
I don't know.
He's
maybe
pretty hated on both sides.
I mean, nobody like W wasn't even invited to his own convention in 2008, and he raised $500 million. But really, Veep is really pulling from accurate history, it seems, and accurate politics with its depiction of Selena trying to drum up support for her library. The Carter Library I spend a good amount of time at in Atlanta because I have an author series. It does not seem like a fancy place, but I don't know.
Peanut farm is not very lucrative.
Maybe that's true. I don't know. But then the Reagan Library was recently on an episode of Baskets, the TV series, and that looked extravagant. And people were charged, the tickets were like $30 a person to go through it, which $8 at the Carter Center. So there you go.
Good to know.
Yeah, there you go. For anyone visiting Atlanta in the near future, visit the Carter Center. Why not? And another real world similarity. It'd be hard to talk about a Soviet satellite state without bringing up a poisoning of a political enemy. That seems to be de rigueur for how things work there. Get a little polonium in someone's vodka and see what happens. But I didn't do any further research into that.
I wonder if that's going to happen to you tomorrow, as your official, basically.
Now that I've made this link, the first time it's ever been made.
No, trying this possibly rotten food that was delivered to my house.
That's true.
Today.
That's true.
You are our taste tester, a la Gary. So, I mean, not that I want to know too much about your dick, but if your dick does blow up like a sea cucumber.
Yeah, the first people to know will be the listeners of the Media Club podcast. So a little more background. Food delivery was misdelivered, and it sat on a porch in a refrigerated bag overnight. I think it's fine, but there is a mother of a newborn here. We need to be certain that it hasn't gone bad.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have an interesting lunch tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to try the chicken tenders, make sure that our toddler's okay.
I can do that. You can try some chicken tenders. I can do that. Yeah, it won't be a problem.
The food delivery company said don't eat that.
They have to protect their end. I think anyone in the know understands that sell-by dates have nothing to do with freshness. It's all about maximum freshness, not rottenness.
Right.
So they're going to err on the side of caution, which is good and fine, but I'm not.
I'm good.
Because that shrimp scampi smelled really good, despite having sat it on a board.
Because it cooked during the day when the sun was beating down on it.
Refrigerated bag on a porch.
If I remember your old house correctly, became an insulated bag.
Your porch is like, it's pretty deep. It's like got a lot of shade, probably by the door. I think it's totally
dropped
fine.
Off on the stone on the other side of the house because it's evening.
Yes, and it was found early in the morning.
It was.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So tune in next week when we find out if that shrimp scampi was indeed edible and not poisonous.
If there's no podcast next week, you just assume John died.
Yeah, reasonable. So any other real world similarities, either global or personal, that we want to bring up in regards to this Veep episode?
There was a guy wearing a Georgia Bulls shirt.
So I don't know what that is.
It didn't say Georgia Bulls. Or not Georgia, Chicago Bulls. It didn't say Chicago Bulls. It was misspelled and said Chicago Bulls.
That is a deep cut.
It was.
I remember the shirt. I do not remember the spelling.
I'm pretty sure it said balls on there.
I just put the links together in my head. That totally makes sense, though.
Yeah. There, like a lot of the other clothing and things they were doing in the background were just, I mean, shows Georgia as this, like, this backwoods country. It's completely ridiculous.
A lot of Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl shirts.
Right, yeah. That was the idea. It was pretty solid. It was a pretty solid gag there.
Favorite moments from this episode of Veep? We've discussed the sea cucumber penis a lot because that's solid. That's some strong Veep comedy right there.
The moment I laughed the hardest of both shows was right in the opening of Veep. Was Kent a flippant remark about Hawaii? It said Hawaii is rightfully a monarchy and will be again. Out of nowhere. Fantastic line.
He's the 18th descendant of King Kamehameha, about to reinstate. There have been a lot of interbreeding, obviously, to get to Kent from a native Hawaiian.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he's not going to take his place on the Hawaiian throne, like a white guy owning an Indian casino or anything like that.
It's a theme in another HBO show, Sopranos.
Sure, it sure is. Fourth season.
My other favorite part, the despot says that he grew up the son of a tire burner. He's burning tires.
That's the joke straight out of The Simpsons. The tire fire, of course, that is always burning.
When I moved here, there's a town nearby called Hoopston, and within the first few months, they had a tire fire that was out of control. And so I always refer to Hoopston as the Hoopston Tire Fire, and no one thinks it's as funny as I do.
And one day, the son of one of those tire burners will grow up to poison his rival in a presidential election.
There you go.
Brian, or maybe moment.
Oh, I really liked Gary opening the water bottle with his mouth. I just thought that was good. He's funny.
They never give him more than a quarter of the frame to do it in either.
Right.
The show is demonstrating as much respect for him as the characters have for him, which was never a lot, but it's minimal now. So that's this week in HBO comedies. Who won? Shane?
Oh, man. Here you go first. I was thinking Veep all the way earlier. Yeah, I'm going to go Veep. I actually laughed more tonight.
Okay.
Even though more things happened in Silicon Valley. It wasn't my favorite episode. Eventually, I was going to have to pick Veep anyway, so.
I'm going to give it to Silicon Valley for exactly that reason. Just the plotting was exceptional on Silicon Valley this week. And despite the poison cock of Stephen Fry, yeah, I just appreciate the momentum a little more.
Break the tie, Brian.
I am going to credit Mina for winning it for Veep this week.
Okay.
She's
Veep for the week, 2-1 margin.
Except for in Silicon Valley, when they talk about, I forget the guy's name, talks about Dinesh should put more product in his hair. That was really funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Whichever answer gets you to put more of that in your hair.
So Veep, 2-0 up on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's close though. It's a
that's true.
It's a 4-2 count on the total points.
Yeah, we've got a lot of interplay as far as who's voting for who, so it could swing. That will bring us to the end of this episode. We're currently on a break as far as movies go, but we'll be announcing our next.
We've been on a break shortly. For months.
Right. Meanwhile, things remain busy at the Media Community Club. We've got the Wire podcast series that we just started. We took a week off from that this last week, but we'll be unquestionably back next week with a discussion of the 4th, 5th, and 6th episodes of season 1. We've got another movie podcast in the chamber, and we may or may not do a summer movie preview in the immediate future because that is starting up on Friday with the release of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Can we play What Have You Been Watching? Because that's my favorite part of every podcast.
I mentioned that I had just watched Joy, as far as a potential movie that could be picked in this, in the remainder of this round, the last five picks, because I thought it was expiring off of HBO now, and I wanted to get to it just in case. Turns out it's not expiring until the end of May. Joy is the movie with Jennifer Lawrence as Joy Megano. I think that was her last name. Who really gives a shit? She's the inventor of a mop that rings itself out, made herself famous on the Home Shopping Network. This is a small fucking story, but somehow the movie lasted more than 2 hours. It's David O. Russell, who did Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle most recently, and he has fully given himself over to the people screaming over each other as conflict. It was terrible. It was fucking terrible. And I hope Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro never work with David O. Russell again, because he has run out of room with me. I did not like American Hustle, and Joy was fucking terrible. So maybe someone will pick that in the remainder of the round. And,
they're going to fear for what you're going to put in their mailbox at this point.
I do kind of hope someone picks it just so I can kill two birds with one stone, like knock out a review that I was going to write anyways.
And the person who picked it.
No, I mean, I like writing bad reviews for bad movies is just as much fun as writing reviews for good movies, in my opinion. It's writing reviews for like C-plus movies that are difficult.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I guess, what have you guys been watching?
You sound so interested.
It just totally breaks our format.
I don't care. Format. Your format.
Defending Your Life last week. An old Albert Brooks movie.
Oh, that's right.
Pretty good.
What was the name of it?
Defending Your Life.
Defending Your Life.
You're kind of like being measured for what you've done in your life. But it's like that by these higher beings who are like way smarter than humans. And the values they put on it is like sticking up for yourself. If every time you live, you get judged, and you actually have like a lawyer for each side, and they argue and they show snippets of your life. It's pretty good. It's an Albert Brooks movie. Meryl Streep is in it. It's kind of a cult classic. I enjoyed it.
It's available on HBO now.
It's a 90s movie.
I've never heard of this. Never heard of it.
I think that's why it's a cult classic.
Okay. I feel like...
It's like 92% Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm. Brian, what have you been watching?
Chelsea and I went and saw The Lost City of Z at the Art Theater. Yeah. It was good. The Amazon produced it, I think. I don't know. I saw an Amazon logo before the movie started. So I think
they're doing that more and more.
Yeah, you had like a main character you were rooting for, and I think because it wasn't made by Michael Bay or the other big movie production companies, there wasn't a lot of B-reel, and like it didn't focus on action and scenery. Like they were trying to fit what should be like a 4-hour story into 2 hours, and they did a pretty good job of it. Like I could have gone for more. I feel like they cut a bunch of stuff out, but they didn't. Like, sometimes I feel that way, and they've got a bunch of scenery shots and just all this extra stuff, but I feel like there's always something going on.
I want to get to that before it leaves theaters. It reminds me a lot of Werner Herzog movies, like Guillermo the Wrath of God and Fitzcarraldo. Fitzcarraldo in particular is probably not my top 50 movies, but in my next 50 movies, it's about a crazed German who... This happened in real life too. He wants to build an opera house in the jungle, and to do so, he needs to get to a bunch of rubber. So he has to drag a ship over, like across the jungle, across land, and he recruits all these natives to help him out. And it's intense, and they really, like, they actually filmed the process of dragging the ship up on the land and over a hill, and in the movie, like this guy Fitzcarraldo actually did in real life. And it's got a lot of Apocalypse Now in it. Werner Herzog is one of these directors who's very much about man not measuring up against nature. I don't know if that's what The Lost City of Z is about thematically, but that's very much what it reminds me of. Guillermo the Wrath of God even more so. That is a bleak, bleak movie.
I've never heard of these, but they sound...
Strong recommends to both.
Watchable. Yeah.
Strong recommends to both. Werner Herzog is... if you don't know who Werner Herzog is, he's got like a very heavy, I mean, he is a German guy, but very heavy German accent. He narrates a lot of his movies, which are documentaries, and probably about half of his filmography is documentaries. And he just, he talks very grandly, like trying to tie in a small event with a giant event. Probably his most famous documentary was Grizzly Man, where the guy was eating a lot. Yeah.
Wasn't that really popular?
It was nominated for an Academy Award. Like, we watched it at 1506, or at least a chunk of it.
Yeah.
In our post-college house. And yeah, there's a lot of him talking about how silly it is for Timothy Leary to think that he's friends with this bear. Like, that fits exactly with what Werner Herzog is always about. Like, you can't be friends with nature. Nature doesn't give a shit about you. Anyways.
I'm glad we had this segment, so I now know about two movies I should watch.
There you go.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Follow us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Find us on the internet at munichmovie.club. We're currently discussing In the Bedroom. Feel free to chime in if you've seen that movie. Let us know what you think the title of this podcast series should be. Silicon VP, VPC, three guys sit down and talk about HBO comedies, or whatever that very long title was.
I think it was like something just casting.
We'll take whatever's best. And I feel like we haven't set the bar very high, as we so often do here at the Media Community Club. Stay tuned to our iTunes feed. We are going to have a lot of content coming out in the next several months. This series, the Wire series, standalone podcasts. We care about you, our fans, and we want to keep you entertained as best we can. So thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.
See ya.